Hey Eric, you ever wonder what Genghis Khan was like as a kid?
Who starts a conversation like that?
I mean, everybody starts somewhere, right?
Where do your characters start? Learn all about backgrounds and how to create your own tonight.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblins Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're talking about backgrounds.
Backgrounds. You got to get some background for your character background. Yeah, much like the delightful backgrounds we have.
Does your character come from Limbo, like Eric's background?
How dare you.
Or the Feywild, like mine.
Actually, that's pretty appropriate now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I've got a dinosaur breathing fire with a cat with a machine gun. Laser beams.
Cowboy hat.
Yeah, I mean, it's got everything, right?
Yeah.
America. That's what it is. It's all about America. Meanwhile, yours has got some trees.
Just got to chill, man.
I mean, hey, that's good. Tonight, we're going to talk about backgrounds, how to make some interesting backgrounds for your character. Now, the backgrounds that are in WotC are great. There's a lot of third-party backgrounds that are great, but maybe you want to feel froggy, make your own.
Yeah.
We've got the rules, and we've got three backgrounds that we've come up with that we feel are pretty fun.
Exactly.
But before we get to all of that, hit that like and subscribe button. Help get our show out to more people. Get notified when more awesome episodes come your way.
Firstly, why are we talking about backgrounds, though?
Well, as you mentioned so eloquently, every character has to start somewhere, and backgrounds are a great way to start someplace.
It's true. They also haven't seen a whole lot of official love from WotC.
That's true. Now, the PH had some backgrounds in there, and there's been some expansions, and every time they add an expansion, they add a couple of backgrounds, which is fine. And again, our third-party creators, you gotta love them. They've come up with a whole host of backgrounds. But maybe you feel that you want to tackle creating your own background because you've got a specific story in mind.
Yeah. To me, they can be a great jumping off point for fleshing out your character. The trait suggestions can help you pin down a few things like, you know, what do they absolutely love? What's their biggest flaw or things like that?
Yeah. And so learning how to flesh that out for your character. Now, you don't even have to use backgrounds, but it's nice to have. And it's a real easy template if you're trying to make characters quick. And let's be honest, sometimes creating a character, and especially D&D, is tough. It takes a while.
Yeah.
It can. I mean, you can nitpick to death. I do oftentimes.
I know.
Hours and hours. Well, should I get this spell or should I get another one? Who knows?
It's the wizard in you.
It is. So that's a great way to do that. Now, knowing your background also helps your DM tie your characters into whatever they want to do in the world as well. And I think that's an awesome way to use a background. And it's easy for the DM. Gives them some points to put together something.
Yeah, some connection points. For me, knowing what your traits are, what your flaws are, and all of that stuff, it allows me to have a couple of leverage points when I'm presenting a story to all of the characters.
Yes.
Right. I want to give you places where that flaw comes into play. I want to give you places where those ideals come into play. So that's super great from a DM's point of view, as well as from just how to play your own character. But one of the things to keep in mind is backgrounds for D&D, at least, are the mechanics that represent your backstory.
Yeah, backgrounds flesh out your backstory. They are the mechanics by which that happens.
Yep.
And it's as simple as that. Not really much to say about it, really.
No.
I mean, they're good to have. You should have backgrounds. Now let's make some. So what's in a background, Matt?
You've got basic story cues behind your character history. These give you generic descriptions about your character's identity. They can reveal how you became an adventurer.
Maybe where you've come from. So you might be, we'll use an example, I've got one, because we mentioned this in a previous episode about evocation, the janitor.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a janitor background. Janitor has to come from somewhere, right? Lone wanderer that just takes care of all the garbage, human or otherwise.
Yeah.
Where does it come from? Comes from the desolate lands, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
The outlander. Real quick, I just thought about something. The janitor could also be a hermit.
Hmm.
Because they usually operate when no one is in the building.
That's a good point. Loner?
That would be an interesting way to play that.
I like that, yeah.
They provide you with a point of reference for your place in the world. If you're a guild artisan, you probably don't live in like a three-horse town.
You might still be an adventurer, but you've got some specific things that you like. Maybe you like fine dining.
Sure.
As opposed to an adventurer that just eats out on the trail, right?
Yep.
If we're a janitor, where would you eat? Who knows, right? Might be some very rich janitors out there.
Sure.
And interestingly enough, that also applies to socioeconomic class. So you can come from a rich background or a poor background.
Sure.
You can have a previous profession.
Yep. Culture.
Yeah. What are those previous professions and cultures? Give yourself something to flesh out in addition to you just being an adventurer.
Yep. You weren't born an adventurer.
Yeah. If Stormbringer the Dark Drow with his lightning sword comes out of Menzon Baranzan and he's enacting vengeance because he was ostracized by his evil, you know, city, that's great. We like that. But what else is going on? What's he doing in his free time?
Does
Stormbringer have a hobby?
And he's got to have some kind of background, some kind of hit. Why would a drow know what a storm is? Like, this dude's been somewhere. He's seen something.
He's seen what a storm is. Yeah. Maybe he was a sailor.
Sure.
Maybe he was rocking around some Kuotoa down in the Underdark and a Underdark storm whipped up. Never know. Could happen.
Yeah.
Maybe he saw it through a scrying lens. Maybe he worked as a scribe as a background. That's a cool background.
Yeah.
And wanted to see the surface world storms for himself. Named himself Stormbringer. He's going to
Sage.
It. Could be a sage. Yeah.
Learned about it from a book.
Got a lot of options, right? Speaking of options, most backgrounds provide several benefits. And these can include a couple of things. They don't have to include all of these, but oftentimes they include at least a couple of these different things. And the first thing is languages.
Sure.
And you usually get 0 to 2.
Right.
Sometimes you get more depending upon your particular background, but
these should fit the background, right? You shouldn't just pick up random language. It should have some touchstone for your character.
Yeah. Going on Scholar, if they were researching the Abyss, probably Abyssal is a language.
That makes perfect sense. If you're a spy, maybe you pick the language of the society that you've infiltrated.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm infiltrating the elves, but I don't know how to speak elven. You're a sucky spy if you do that. Oftentimes, a background provides tool use.
Mm-hmm.
And this is usually one or two, sometimes more, but usually it's just like one or two different types of tools. And I'll give you an example. If you're a miner, you've probably got mining pick as a tool, or at least tool use. Or if you're like a locksmith, you've got lockpick kit.
Yep.
If you're an herbalist, you've got herbs.
An herbalism kit.
Well, yeah. You just did maybe just herbs.
Just
some sticky herbs that you mix together. And look, man, didn't say what kind of herbalist you are.
It's true. Recreational herbalist.
Hey, that's a new background. Recreational herbalist. Think about that.
I'm here to help.
I mean, that might be some of the players, too.
It's true.
All right. What else do we have in addition to languages and tool use, Matt?
You usually get up to 4 skills, but usually just 2.
Just 2?
These are what helped you perform your background. They might be very specific, or you can choose from a set list.
Yeah, and we prefer either or, right? The navigation might be a very useful skill if you're a sailor.
Sure.
I mean, swimming would probably also be a very useful skill to have.
Yeah. Pilot water vehicle would be
useful. Oh, yeah, that's always useful as well, right? Got to have those skills, man.
If you're a carter, pilot land craft, because you probably want to be able to make that thing go in the direction you're attempting for.
If you are a criminal, maybe sneak is a skill you should learn.
Indeed.
Just saying.
It does irritate me that the criminal background does not give you the Thieves' Cant language. That frustrates me.
How dare they? Does anything give you Thieves' Cant? I don't even remember.
Rogue.
Rogue does? Just that straight up rogue? Just,
you either are a rogue of the rogue class to get it, and nobody else gets it.
We can change that. In addition to skills, you get some starting equipment and a little bit of money. And from what we've seen, this is anywhere between like 10 gold if you've got like a lot of skills and languages to up to 50 gold if you don't have a whole lot.
Right.
It tends to balance itself out for most of this.
Sure. And or sometimes your background feature is a little more beefy for some classes than or from some backgrounds than others. And that might pull down your cash, your starting cash a little bit, too.
Yeah. And in terms of background features, what are we talking about here? What is that?
It's generally a minor benefit of some sort directly related to whatever the story cue of the background is.
And it can also be a specialty.
So sure.
For example, if you are an entertainer, have some kind of entertaining background, you might have a specific routine and you can choose from like a list or you can just pick one.
Yep.
Might also just be general knowledge. So if you're a sage, you might have a specialty of knowledge like outer planes or whatnot, right?
It might contain variants on the background. An archaeologist scholar versus an archaeologist explorer.
Yeah, two different professions, but they do the same thing.
Exactly. One might get you an extra language, whereas the other might get you knowledge in investigation.
And a cool hat.
Well, yeah.
I mean, gotta have that hat, man.
And whip as part of your gear.
Hatred of snakes. It should be noted, as we mentioned, these things should balance out somewhat. If you have more gold pieces worth of equipment, as we mentioned, you may not have as many languages. Keep things interesting, though. Don't feel the need to have everything perfectly balanced because, let's be perfectly honest, nothing is balanced in any RPG. I don't care which one it is.
No.
They tend to all be fair, but there's always a way to overpower something.
Sure.
So just let it balance out generally. Don't make it overpowered. Make it fun, because if it's not fun, no one's going to play the background.
Right.
Finally, we've come to some characteristics.
You've got personality trait, which can either be picked or rolled on a D8. So there's obviously usually 8 of those. Ideals, mm-hmm. There's usually 6 of those.
And they're generally alignment-based axis, right? So could be good, evil, lawful, chaotic, or any.
Right. Bonds.
Talk about a bond. What is a bond?
So a bond is the thing that your character is attempting to do or will always attempt to move towards.
It oftentimes could be something that is positive, but it doesn't always have to be. It's usually something story related, though, like where I learn to become this particular background or maybe something that I want to do.
Right.
It's story options.
Sure. And flaws.
And those are generally negative.
Right.
I believe they're always negative, in fact.
They are always intended to be negative.
And again, you don't have to take the ones that are suggested. You can always choose your own.
Sure. And that is something I was going to say is if something makes sense for the character you're making and it's not on that list of flaws, okay, under flaw, you just write down whatever it is that actually makes sense for the character. Having a flaw is useful. It doesn't have to be one specifically from the background.
Yeah.
That said, we did provide them for hours.
Of course, yeah. And you can always choose more flaws or more bonds or more ideals if you wish. You don't have to just select one. It's really just, again, if you want a fast way to create characters in terms of backgrounds and stories and stuff like that, this is what it's used for. If you want to add more, obviously add more. There are very few DMs that will sit there and say, I don't want more character information about your character. Any DM that tells you otherwise is probably a bad DM. And I'll go out on the record and say that.
Your character has too much flavor. Stop it.
It's too much flavor. Too spicy for me. I can't stand it. Well, you're a bland DM and you should be ashamed of yourself.
I will say, if you can help it, do not hand your DM a novel.
We're not talking War and Peace here. But, you know, a good couple of, even a good couple of sentences or pages is fine.
Yeah.
If you're writing a book, then, you know, that might be a little too much.
More than 10 pages means you're starting to fill gaps that they would otherwise be able to play with. Because once you start getting too detailed, now you're leaving them with no room to actually play.
Yes.
With that background at all.
Here's a good trick that I recommend to my players, and I recommend to you guys as well, listening or watching us on YouTube. Come up with a couple of open-ended story options for your character in your background. Like, this character maybe made someone particularly angry at some point. And you don't even have to say who or what that character is.
Yeah.
Give these little gifts to your DM, and that allows them to fill in the blanks later on. Now you might have a villain with a personal tie to your character. That's cool, right?
Yeah.
You might also say something like,
I was visiting a city and made some cultural missteps unbeknownst to me.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I stumble upon a trinket that I didn't know the importance of.
Yeah. So you've got some random trinket. And as a DM, I'm going to give you a trinket. I'm going to roll that on the table. It's Hell going yeah. on your character sheet. You have a trinket. You don't know what it does or what it's for or why it's important, but it is now. It
might be an artifact a couple games from now. You never know, right? You might not even remember it, but the DM remembers.
And just as a real quick, I believe in every character rolling for a trinket, and I believe every trinket should have something attached to it.
Like a quirk?
Well, not just a quirk. Most of them are quirky little things anyway. I'm talking about, like, if you get the dragon-headed pirate flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
That belonged to a ship or to a captain.
That belonged to a pirate kobold, and you took his damn flag, and he's coming for you.
Or somebody else took it, and it just happened to find its way into your hand.
Sure.
So, stuff like that, right? Like, if it comes into play, it's gonna come into play.
Absolutely. Now, tonight we have 3 sample backgrounds for use, and these are just some that we came up with. We might expand out more if you guys enjoy this episode.
Sure.
But we are going to talk about several things. We'll talk about all, like, the personality traits and so forth. We're going to give a little description. And I would also say we're going to expound on some character classes that might be really fun to play with these backgrounds.
Absolutely.
And Matt, you've got the first one, and it's a cook.
Absolutely.
I am shocked that we don't have a cook background in like standard D&D. I'm sure some third party came up with it at some point, but we got one too. Yeah.
There's also not a bartender or server. There's no hospitality based background, which is nonsense considering how much of the population does that.
We've written that down now. So there you go. So Matt, tell me a little bit about a cook. What's in a cook?
All right. Well, the kitchen is your castle and fire is your friend. You probably spent most of your formative years in or around kitchens, whether helping prep meals for a large farmhouse family, or at an inn or tavern, maybe family-owned restaurants, maybe as a helper in the kitchens of a large keep. Wherever it was, you fell under the spell of the flow that comes when fire and food meet. You've learned some tricks of the trade that make the kitchen run smoothly and efficiently, as well as, you know, how to actually cook.
Yeah, so you're a cook. You learn how to cook. You've been around cooking all your life. Maybe you helped out, like you said. You may not necessarily be a chef or something like that. You could also be just someone from nobility that happened to hang around the kitchen.
Yeah. Imagine being the freaking sixth born, right? Nobody's got time for you. Some of them are training to be the actual next master of the household. Some of them are, you know, going into the temple, and by the time it got to you, like, you just dove to get out of the way, right? And kitchens always have snacks. They've always got drinks.
Always got places to hang out.
Yeah. There's always people to talk to, and as long as you're not in the way, you're probably all right.
And there's always something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we've got some skills, some tool use, some languages and equipment. So talk to me about the skills. What do you get?
The first one, you're going to pick 2 of these, and we've got them split in 2. Either persuasion or intimidate.
That makes sense. Either persuade someone or intimidate. There are
surly, it's how you run a kitchen.
Yeah, surly cooks and persuasive cooks. I like that.
And either knowledge nature or sleight of hand.
I like the knowledge nature, and I get that. Sleight of hand. Talk to me about that.
Okay, so sleight of hand, while it's typically used for rogue stuff, is actually the skill that measures your manual dexterity and how you deal with any given thing. If something falls off of the shelf and you have to catch it, what do you make someone roll?
Oh, dexterity or sleight of hand.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So you're talking about chopping finely or dicing elements and such.
Exactly. That is how I would treat it.
I like that. That's cool. You have cook's tools as your tools. That makes perfect sense. And that can be whatever cook's tools that happens to be. It could be pots and pans or maybe a nice set of Ginsu knives.
Sure. Ginsu.
Any other knives, Mr. Chef? Matt actually is a cook, so.
Yeah, literally anything but Ginsu.
That's fine. Look, you can see I'm not a cook, so.
tools, you get Cook's tools. Obviously, that it only makes sense. For languages, though, pick one.
Anyone.
Anyone. It is traditionally true in most of Western culture that kitchens are where you will find immigrants, especially parent immigrants, that are trying to provide a better life for their children.
We both worked growing up in kitchens.
Yeah.
I was waiting tables. You were cooking up stuff. Yeah. And there's all sorts of people. And it was great.
And I say pick one because depending on where you are determines what group of people are working in the kitchen.
Sure.
So it only makes sense.
I would pick Kobold. Kobold cooks.
I can see Kobold cooks.
That'd be kind of cool.
I would not pick Lizard Man.
No.
Unless you're working at like a very meat heavy restaurant.
What is this grilling you talk about? Serve it raw, serve it bloody.
Oh my goodness. A Lizard Man sushi chef.
That's exactly what I was thinking in my head too. Yeah, great. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You get some equipment?
Sure. You get the cook's toolkit. Obviously, a bottle of wine. Sometimes you need a bottle of wine to cook with.
Yeah.
A bottle of booze.
Sometimes you need a bottle of booze to cook with.
Sometimes you need a bottle of booze to drink. Have you met cooks? the incidence of alcoholism and kitchens is extremely high.
Fair enough, sir.
And 20 gold pieces.
Yeah, you got a little money. Now, this has a feature as well. What's your feature for being a cook?
Improvise. Cooks are used to making do with what is available to get the job done, whether it's subbing ingredients or making tools do things they're not designed for. Nearly every object in a kitchen is a weapon if you use it wrong enough. So cooks get to use their proficiency bonus on improvised weapons.
Yeah. There it is right there. You pick up a bottle, any type of bladed weapon, anything with a sharp edge.
Pots. Pans, lids, like literally everything in a kitchen.
Kitchens are deadly.
Is a weapon.
I love that.
Club somebody with a cutting board. It's just good times all the way around.
Yeah, improvised weapons are great. Now, in addition to that, I would say that maybe cooks have a specialty, and you can select a specialty as well.
Sure. Just whatever you want it to be, though. If you're playing in a high fantasy campaign, right? Maybe you worked under an elven chef and your specialty, even if you're a kobold, is elven food because that was your frame of reference for cooking.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what you eat. Anything. That's what you can cook.
Yeah.
Might do desserts or pastries.
Sure.
Might be baking. Might be, as I just mentioned, sushi chef, right? Yeah.
You should not play a pastry chef unless you're willing to play an insane character. I'll go on record as saying that. Every pastry chef I've ever met has been wildly out of their mind.
All I can see is an adventurer who's a pastry chef that's a barbarian and makes meat pies out of all the monsters.
That would be kind of dope.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be great.
Let's talk about some suggested characteristics.
Okay, we've got personality traits first, and we've got 8. What are some of these?
I enjoy making dishes for others. Simple.
Simple, clean. Easy to do.
I often wonder what an object, mineral, animal, plant, or monster would taste like. Sometimes I go out of my way to sample these.
Man, that's also wonderfully weird.
Owlbear, right? Yeah, I got it.
It's beef and chicken. Yeah, I'm feeling you, man. This is perfect. It's like, what does an aboleth taste like? Is it octopus and fish?
Hmm.
Think about that. Yeah.
I'm always finding different uses for common items, right? If you're used to just improvising whatever's handy, that bleeds over into your non-cooking life.
Absolutely.
Sometimes to the extent of knowing that you've got something useful, but it's in the other room. Ah, I can make this work. It's handy. I tend to think of complex ideas as steps in a recipe. Just how your brain is trained. If it bleeds, we can kill it and then grill it with a fine wine.
Mm-hmm. There goes your adventure chef right there with the cooking feet.
Yep. I tip well for good service and give an earful for bad.
And that can apply not just to restaurants, but anybody in the game.
Yeah.
You got an innkeeper, get pissed off, give an earful.
Coachman, anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't expect a different result from the same actions. If you want to improve, you have to experiment and try new things.
Much like cooks. Yeah. You're like making a cookie recipe, right? You do the same thing every time. You're going to get the same thing. You want to experiment, mix it up. That's how you improve.
You know, the first person that was like, I'm going to chop up some chocolate and put it in the sugar cookie recipe, blew everyone's mind.
Except for the herbalist. The recreational herbalist.
Yeah.
He knew. He knew what's up. He was the first person to eat that.
He might have been the person, or she might have been the person that made those.
We're making that background, the recreational herbalist.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
If you want to get the lay of the land, ask someone in the service industry. They know more than any noble or spy master.
That is 100% true.
You That's just facts.
Rumor
just
mill?
Presenting facts here.
Talk to someone that serves in a castle. There you go. Let's talk about some ideals. And again, these are alignment-based for the most part. What do we got?
Food is love.
Good.
Sure. Food is a science.
Lawful.
Food is expression.
Chaotic.
Yeah. If you've ever seen the ridiculous art foodies, it's chaotic.
I agree with that.
It is easier to persuade the stomach than the mind.
That's any. Yeah.
Food builds bridges.
It could be any. Builds bridges for good or burns bridges for bad.
Sure. Food is the perfect vessel for poison.
That's definitely evil. Again, it's in the meat pie. Think about that.
That's why you make it spicy.
All right, what are your bonds?
I apprenticed to the chef of a very picky nobleman. I learned to come up with unique solutions to the same problem.
Excellent. I like that. Very useful. Very handy.
Number two, my grandmother taught me everything I know, and I try to bring a little bit of that joy to others.
What a great bond. That's a great background for a good character and such.
Yeah. Number three, armies march on their stomachs. Understand how supplies work, and you will understand the army.
Yeah. Maybe you have a military background, and you're an army chef.
Sure. Number four, a baker took me in when I was an orphan, and now I always stop to feed someone who is hungry. Right? It's just a piece of who this character is.
A little bit of lore, a little tidbit to give your DM.
Yep. Number five, kitchens are hotbeds of information if you're willing to listen.
You want to play a spy cook? There you go.
Once again, that's just facts.
Yeah.
Number six, growing up on the frontier teaches you that almost anything is edible if prepared correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one for the monster cooks out there.
Absolutely. Now we have some flaws, finally.
Mm-hmm. The first, I have a favorite dish that I cannot tolerate others to make.
Yep.
I get it.
This is my mac and cheese, only mine.
This mac and cheese is garbage. Look at it. No, I don't need to eat it. Have you seen it?
There's no bacon in this mac and cheese. Come on.
I get it. Number two, I dislike cheap, simple food. I know these people.
You fucking snob.
And I despise them. Man, sometimes cheap, simple food
is delicious.
It's wonderful food.
But what a great flaw to have.
Sure. Number three, I obsess over how things are presented.
Good flaw.
Yep. Number four, I will not serve food unless it is perfect. I get it. Yeah. Number five, I am obsessed with the perfect dish, whatever it is.
Perfect omelet, perfect barbecue, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah, you're just trying to work it out. Number six, I try to impress my culinary tastes on others.
Have you eaten Mind Flayer? Have you tried this Mind Flayer? Look at this deep fried Mind Flayer. I'm going to give you this deep fried Mind Flayer.
Elvish food is the most delicious food. Oh, you just don't have a refined enough palate for it. But if you keep trying it, sooner or later, you'll develop that
you'll
palate.
Like you're going to love this bread. Elvish yeah, you'll food. Love this. Eat this ground up acorn, damn it. That's how it is. So finally, who would be fun to play as a cook in terms of character class for D&D?
Honestly, for the cook, I can see any class really working, because either you're coming at it scientifically like a wizard, mm-hmm. right? Or you're coming at it artistically like a bard. They're just barbarians, right?
Barbarians,
it's about survival.
I could totally see a barbarian grill chef, like a barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
He kills a dragon, barbecues it up. He's got a little smoke pot behind him.
100%.
Fighters would be great. Something sure. for him to do. Sharpen their knives anyway. Rogues, why not?
Service industry is a great place to learn a lot of things about a lot of things.
That's also great for infiltration mm-hmm. as well, because no one recognizes the help.
Yep.
So you could infiltrate easily if you know your way around a kitchen.
Absolutely.
And finally, the warlock. Patron of gluttony, perhaps?
Could be.
That'd be kind of cool.
And I can definitely see like especially a good cleric, a good paladin, knowing how to cook just to feed people, right? Just to be the good guy.
Yeah. So there's your cook. Now we're going to mix it up a little bit, because now we have...
the question of the week.
All right. So what's the question of the week this time, Matt?
What skills has your lived background granted you in a D&D world?
Oh, that's a lot of stuff, man. I've had all kinds of weird ass jobs.
It's true. Let's try and like break it down to a background.
I'll pick a couple. Okay. So I would say sleight of hand, because I used to be a magician.
Sure.
Since I do improv, I'll say performance.
Sure.
Spoken word, perhaps. Performance, improv, comedy.
Right.
And then knowledge. There's no science knowledge. So knowledge arcana, perhaps, in game world. Knowledge could be. Science.
Either arcana, you know, as kind of a correlation, or even knowledge nature also.
Yeah. Knowledge nature would be fun. I'd say if I had like any tool use, I would say something like dice set.
Oh, yeah. Gaming set. Sure.
Because we do a lot of gaming. We've got lots of dice.
And, I mean, you build stuff on a fairly regular basis, so I would say probably woodworking tools.
Yeah. Yeah. I built tables, stuff like that. And my eternal basement that still has not yet been finished has been, you know, in the process of being constructed.
But in fairness, I mean, you made some bookshelves that lasted through our entire bachelor pad years. So I feel like that counts.
Yeah, good enough. Yeah. In terms of languages, I mean, I have one language, but that's about it.
You speak common.
Yeah, I speak common. Sorry. And in terms of equipment, what you see is what you get, right?
Sure.
What about you? What would you have? You've had a lot of weird jobs too. So, I mean, like, this is kind of hard for us.
It is. Knowledge nature definitely fits for me. Obviously, cook's tools. If there's bartender tools, those.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that kind of frustrates me a little bit is that alchemy / herbalism, like, I can't do any of the magic stuff, right? But I know how to make things from all of the other stuff. So, like, either of those, but without the magical component.
Sure. I like that. You got any languages or equipment?
I have languages, but none of them would apply to a D&D world, I don't think. I don't think elves speak Spanish or German. So I mean,
there's somebody out there in the real world that probably speaks Elven. Bunch of Tolkien fans.
That's fair.
So
they'd be set. As far as tools go, you know, once again, I have an entire cook set, obviously. I have an entire bartender set. And a bunch of other stuff. So realistically, I've got an entire herbalism set.
What's your background and how would it apply to a D&D game or any other TTRPG for that matter? Let us know at Goblin's Corner on Twitter. And of course, you can find us on all the things.
So many things.
Yeah, hit us up. I'm interested on this one.
All right. But for our next background.
Ah, yes. We have.
Speaking of languages.
We've got a language expert.
All right.
And this is the polyglot.
Okay.
Description goes as follows. You've always found languages interesting and from an early age learned as many as you could to help out your family, your town, or yourself.
Sure.
Maybe you come from a group of sailors or traders. Maybe you live in a city which has a large amount of tourists. Whatever the case, early on you had access to as many different languages and cultures and you used it to your advantage.
Sure.
That's it. You learn about languages, right?
Right. What are the skill proficiencies for the polyglot?
Much like your cook, you can select two of the following. Okay. So either insight or perception,
okay.
either or, in either persuasion or deception.
Sure.
So you're either insightful or perceptive, and you're either persuasive or deceptive, depending upon your mood and so forth.
Right. Were you helping the tourists,
or
were you profiting off of the tourists?
Milking them for all they're worth.
Sure.
Languages, select four, any of your choice. It's a lot of languages.
That is. It makes sense.
No tool proficiencies whatsoever.
You're too busy studying languages.
Yeah. And your equipment, common clothes, a language dictionary of your choice. Doesn't have to be one you know.
Right.
And a pouch filled with 15 gold. That's it.
There you go. Super simple. What's the feature?
Your feature is called Pigeon. Your mastery of languages allows you some ability to communicate and understand the syntax and general gist of all spoken languages. You may attempt to verbally communicate with any creature which has some sort of language, with a DC determined by how far removed the creature's language is from the ones you currently know and have studied.
Okay, that makes sense.
So if you know how to speak goblin and you're trying to talk to an orc that speaks orc, you might have pretty easy DC to, like, you know, get your point across, right?
Sure.
If you're talking to a sphinx, it might be different DC, right? For example, knowing the root language primordial allows you to some of the understanding of the dialect Arin.
Sure.
As drow come from surface elves, you could potentially communicate them with your language of elvish, although they probably won't enjoy that if you start talking to them in elvish and not drow. Additionally, and this is a fun one, you do not suffer any disadvantage to attempt to communicate with the creature without using words. By way of gesturing and movement, the creature must have an anatomy similar to yours for this to work.
Sure.
You're not talking to a grell with this.
Right.
If you're humanoid with two arms and two legs, and you're talking to another creature with two arms and two legs, you might be able to get some of the point across.
Sure. Even if I don't share any kind of language with anybody, right? If I mime grabbing a spoon into a bowl and putting it in my mouth, then odds are, no matter where in the world you are, someone is going to understand that you need something to eat.
Yeah. Again, DM fiat overrules all this, right?
Right.
So just think about some story implications for this. This is all story stuff.
Sure. Now we've got some, speaking of story stuff, we've got some suggested characteristics, and we're going to start off with personality traits.
Yep. There's eight. First one is, I like to surprise people with my knowledge of their language. It's a good one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like to try to use two words where one would suffice.
A little loquacious. Gotcha.
Just a bit. I feel confident knowing I can understand others. And it should just be something simple like that, right? That's an emotion.
Yeah.
I switch languages when frustrated or angry. This is fun because your player characters may not know the language you're switching to.
Right.
You're going back and forth, right? I attempt to clarify everything I say. So if you're playing an asshole scholar.
Yeah, or just somebody with anxiety.
Mm-hmm. I am more interested in what people say and do than the actual people themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
You're interested in languages, right? I enjoy having the perfect verbal response to a situation. And I obsess over any language I don't understand.
Which makes sense for a polyglot, right?
If it's
tied to your root vision of yourself. You've also got some ideals here. There's six of those. What you got?
Okay. Communication is the key to peace.
Good. Sure. Yep.
Choosing the right word or phrase can bring peace or death.
Lawful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Communicating is the prequel to understanding.
Any.
I hope one day to speak every native tongue.
That's any. That's just something you want to do.
Absolutely. I wish to bring understanding to others.
Lawful, I guess.
Yes, I would say generally lawful in that. Maybe leaning towards good, too, if you want. And then finally, I gain their trust and you can talk them into anything.
And evil.
Yes.
Sure.
Got to fleece somebody out of some cash, man.
All right. We also have bonds. You've got six of those. What are we starting off with?
I will go out of my way to talk to someone. You never know who you'll meet or what you'll learn. That's a great background, right?
It is. That's really fun for a PC who actually wants to get involved in the world they're in.
Yes. I teach others to further their understanding and mine. Maybe you grew up as a scholar of some sort, right?
Sure.
Someday I will uncover the root of all languages. Ambitious.
Mm-hmm. I could even go into, like, the words of creation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can see a
dark speech, even.
Yeah, creation bard. I could definitely see with that.
It'd be fun. I seek sacred texts and unknown languages to further my understanding of the cosmos.
Sure.
Again, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I owe my life to the caravan merchant who taught me about the world. So maybe you just grew up in a traveling merchant, right?
Yeah.
Learning all these languages. And then finally, money is meaningless without the understanding to use it.
Absolutely. If you're going from place to place and you can't have a conversation, some things are going to be worth more and worth less than they are in other places.
Yes, indeed.
We also have a list of six flaws.
That's right. So the first flaw is, I look down on monoglots. How dare you only speak one language? I'm much better than you.
Plebe.
Yeah, that's a pretty good flaw to have for a polyglot.
Sure.
The second one is, I try to teach people whether or not they're interested.
We all know those people.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. we've all talked to some of those people. I dislike using common and often make a point to resort to someone's native language. Now, you might think, why is this a flaw? Maybe they don't speak their native language.
Right. Especially if you're in a big metropolis.
Yeah. I judge others based on what they say over what they do.
That is clearly a flaw.
For a polyglot, yes. I often argue over semantics. I totally see a wizard character playing with this flaw.
Absolutely.
We're gonna jump in the door. You mean...
Door, actually, is the English root. And it only is a door if it slides. If it's on hinges, it's not a door.
My good man, this is a portcullis. This is no door. Exactly. Can't you see from the filigree work and the armor and the fact that it says portcullis? Oh, you don't speak that language of orc? I do. Now you know. And finally... applies to the fifth one as well, but the final one is, I have to get the last word in. I see a rogue with this, as you've raided the dragon and you're sneaking out. Gotcha, motherfucker!
Satire bard.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of classes and stuff, what's a polyglot good for? Bards.
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 Wizards.
And bards. Mostly bards.
Enchantment charm wizards.
Yeah, I could see that. Wizards would be great for this, because they tend to be erudite anyway.
Clerics.
Like a cloistered cleric?
Well, not just that, but for you to command people, they have to understand the command.
That's a good point. You could tell it to them in multiple languages, just in case. I would love to see a barbarian with this.
And see, to me, that does make sense, because if you're a barbarian from a group of people that are nomadic, then it would make sense for you to understand all the languages of the people you trade with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it could, and again, this can apply to any class, right? Rangers would be great as this, as a polyglot. Druids would be great as a polyglot, maybe less so than others, but I could see this happening, especially if you're doing like Feywild stuff. So Elven and Sylvan and various languages like mm-hmm. that. Yeah. This applies to everyone, but I mostly see it as a bard myself.
Because there are creatures that are native to the wilds.
An old school abyssal warlock pact with polyglot. They need to get dark speech at some point with this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that would be perfect. We've got one final background, and this one we kind of both came up with a little bit, and this is the hunted background. And I love the concept behind this. Matt, maybe tell about that.
All right. At some point in your past, you were accused of some dark and terrible crime. Whether you did it or not isn't important. The only important thing is the people or creatures that hunt you believe you did.
Yeah. You're accused of a crime you can't commit. Now you must jump in your A-team van and roam around the country.
It's true. You've been on the run long enough to pick up some skills that make avoiding your pursuers a bit easier.
That's awesome. So it could be you actually did commit the crime, or you were a fugitive for something.
And that matters to the character, but it doesn't matter for the background.
No, not at all. What kind of proficiencies do we have? Do we have any proficiencies?
Of course. Skill proficiencies, survival, and stealth.
That makes sense. Gotta be sneaky, and you gotta survive on your own.
Yep.
Languages.
Pick one.
Just anyone.
Yep, you picked it up in your travels.
As you were on the run. Tool proficiencies?
Either disguise... so that you can, you know, not look like you, or forgery.
So you can forge some papers.
That say very clearly you are not you.
I like that. That's cool, too. And so I'm assuming the equipment is tied to those as well.
Indeed. Either a disguise or a forge kit.
Sure.
Probably ought to be the one that you have proficiency in, but I guess technically, take your choice. Common clothes, a backpack, a bedroll, and 15 gold pieces.
We've got a feature, and I love this feature. Somebody's watching me. Ain't got no privacy. Yeah. Your paranoia pays off. You may make a survival check, DC 10, to recognize people or creatures that are stalking a specific target. Mm-hmm. How cool is that?
Now, with a check of 17 plus, you can also identify the target type.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, should you make the check to identify the stalker, you also gain advantage on any stealth check against the creature. Now, let's talk about this for just a second. So, I make a DC 10. I recognize that someone is stalking somebody else, or even me.
Right.
I make my check of 17 plus. I identify the target type. What would target type be, Matt? Like, give it an example.
Okay, so if somebody's stalking you, then the only type they have
is you. Okay.
But if you've got some creepy dudes in the corner that are specifically eyeing women, then the target type would be women, because they're not stalking a specific person. They're just stalking a type.
This would be cool for an intrigue campaign, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And then, of course, you know, if you make your check, then you get to gain advantage on stuff, so you could follow the person. Maybe you're a paladin of the Batman and you have this. Think about that. Now you could stalk people better, right?
Absolutely.
Exacts with vengeance.
The other side of that is, if you recognize that somebody's stalking you because it's one of the people that are after you,
you can sneak away.
You can sneak away.
Yeah, I got advantage on that. That's good to do.
Just have a little distraction. The second they're distracted, poof, you're gone.
Speaking of sneaking away, let's talk about some personality traits. And the first one is, I look over my shoulder at all times.
Makes sense.
That's an easy character trait to exhibit, right? And fun to play, by the way. Playing a paranoid character is always fun. Yeah.
My first order of business when I walk into a room is to check all of the available exits and entries.
Oh, yeah. I do not talk freely until I know my audience.
Makes sense.
Okay, they might be hunting you.
Mm-hmm. I tend to use assumed names and disguises whenever possible.
I don't trust those who enforce the law.
Makes sense, especially if you're being hunted and you didn't commit the crime.
Yes.
Because at that point, how do you trust any law enforcement? I tend to be prepared to leave at a moment's notice, and I always keep my bags packed.
Yeah, you never know when you're going to have to book.
Yep.
I'm very interested in wood lore and bushcraft. You may have to survive out in the woods for extended periods of time.
Sure. I tend to think several steps ahead of whatever plan is made.
Mm-hmm. Got to know that.
Yep. Because if you're being hunted, those that are hunting you could pop out at any second. So you got to have wheels that are running before the wheels are running.
Yeah, catch me if you can, my friend. Ideals. We got six ideals, and the first is the law must be changed to protect the innocent first.
Sure.
Good.
Yeah. I just want to be left alone. Any.
I do not betray a trust that has been given to me. Lawful.
I try to help others whenever I can. Hopefully this will atone for how society has judged me.
And I would assume that's good, but you put down any, and that makes a lot of sense because it doesn't mean you didn't do the deed.
Exactly.
Maybe you're just trying to make people feel better about what you've done.
Right. That is very much dependent on what angle you're taking. Are you actually seeking redemption, or do you just want people to leave you alone about whatever it was you did?
Absolutely. I've had to look out for myself so long, I don't know any other way to live. And that can be any as well. Could be good, could be evil, probably neutral. And then what's your final one?
I am attempting to amass enough wealth or power to be above the law.
Chaotic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. What are our bonds?
Number one is, I will prove my innocence by finding the responsible party.
Yeah, that's a great lore to draw upon, right? You find the responsible party. That's something, that's a gift to the DM to eventually throw in at some point in time. Very similar, I will return and take my vengeance on those who hunt me.
Now, I like this one because it still doesn't decide whether or not you were responsible for the crime.
None of these do.
Well, I will prove my innocence.
Oh, yeah. That assumes you're innocent. Yeah.
Right.
That
makes sense. The second one could go either way. Like, you're just tired of being hunted and you're going to go back and take your vengeance. Or you didn't do it in the first damn place and these people have ruined your life.
Have you ever thought about piracy? You make a great Dread Pirate Roberts.
Indeed. Number three. I'm the only one who got away. The others were captured and someday I'll find them.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Love that lore. Number four is, my flight has given me strength. And while it is a mixed blessing, I take pride in the fact I shall be completely self-sufficient.
Yeah.
For good or for ill, right?
Yep. I was forced to leave loved ones behind, and one day I will return for them.
Now that one is specifically either good or bad.
Yeah, it really depends on the tone of how you read that.
Uh-huh. And then finally, I was taught how to run by another who was hunted, and for that I owe them my life.
Now, that could be a super interesting place to put a lever for a plot point. Like,
I would say, if I was a savvy DM, is the person that taught you how to be on the run actually was the person that framed you in the beginning.
Oh, see, I was thinking somewhere down the line, you get a message that says the person that taught you how to run for your life has been imprisoned somewhere.
Oh, and you got to rescue the
and
person?
You've got to rescue
Sure, him. Yeah. Three Musketeers, that action, my friend. That's good times. Let's find some flaws for the hunted. What do we got?
Shouldn't be that hard. I find it difficult to trust anyone, even my allies.
Because you're paranoid.
Sure.
Yeah. I can't stay in place for very long.
Also,
got to be on the move, right?
Yeah, if you're used to running, you're used to running. I never enter a town without a disguise.
That can be comic or potentially hazardous, depending upon how you play it.
Sure.
I live every day like it was my last, because it might be.
Yeah, you're just a hedonist, right? Just
you could be dead tomorrow, man.
Exactly.
Those inevitables are after you because you broke some cosmic law.
Indeed. had to spike the camera for that one. All right. I judge potential allies by whether or not they will slow me down.
Because you just have to run faster than the person that's running behind you to get away from the owlbear or the person hunting you. And finally, I often obsessively discuss my crime to any who will listen. And that could be because you did it or because you're innocent, man. Don't you believe me? And that's also fun, too.
Yep.
Finally, Matt, what is a good class to play a hunted background?
Honestly, I feel like this is another one of those that you could literally, if you put together the characteristics right, it could go for anything.
I think flavor wise, this would be perfect for a ranger.
I can see that for like the self-sufficient side of it.
Yeah.
But for the I'll become powerful enough to be above the law.
Warlock,
wizard.
Yeah.
For a lot of the law has to be changed because I'm innocent, all of that stuff, that could be anybody.
That could be a paladin. That would be a great paladin background.
Absolutely. That's another one of the backgrounds that just really works for anybody well.
So there you have it. Three awesome backgrounds that you can use for your game or campaign, as well as the means to create your own background for your D&D game as well. Any questions or comments, hit us up at Goblin's Corner on Twitter. And of course, we're on all of the things.
So many things.
Did you like our show? We hope so. Subscribe to your podcast on your favorite player, YouTube and Twitch.
If you could do us a favor, click the 5 stars, give us a review on iTunes or Podchaser. And on YouTube, like, subscribe, comment, click the bell so that you get notified when new episodes come out. It helps us get our show in front of more people. And it feeds the hungry algorithm.
Hungry algorithm has a great backstory. It's sneaking up behind you because it's hunting you.
Bastard.
It is the inevitable.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for tonight. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
Good night, folks. In a world where the Goblin's Corner is by Matt Staples
and Eric Holden. Show song by the mighty D20. Da, da.
This has been a Subterranean production. Coming soon.